Wakanda! Welcome!
The Casamigos Big Shot of the Night is brought to you by Casamigos Tequila. Casamigos Tequila is brought to you by those who drink it, man. Tonight, we're going to pour up a big shot for the Lighter family. I know, Jack Lighter, big shot because he made his debut in the show, but it did not go the way you would want it to go. He only got through 3 2/3 innings. He gave up 8 hits, 7 earned runs, 3 walks, and 3 Ks, but he's in there. And why are we pouring it up for the family? I saw today that Jack Leiter's MLB debut, and Al Leiter and Mark Leiter brothers, they became the first pair of MLB brothers to have MLB sons. So they made history today. Mark Leiter Jr., Jack Leiter, shout out to Mark Leiter and Al Leiter. I'll give a Casamigos round of shots to the Leiter family. You know, Jersey guys, local guys, former Mets, Yankees guys, and Jack Leiter, we wish you luck as you also played at Del Barton with Anthony Volpe, who I was just speaking on. We're going to speak more about that. Let's go to Ed in Mohegan on the fan. What's up, Ed?
Hey, man, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
So I'm listening to you talk. I'm good. I'm listening to you talk about Anthony Volpe, and I agree with you. I would have left him at the bottom of the lineup a little bit longer, but these are professional ballplayers, all right? But the Yankees are going to lose because Volpe is at the top of the lineup, and maybe they're not that good.
No, that's not why they're going to. That's not why they lost. Who said that's what? Who said?
Well, you said after the Marlins game that they weren't playing and they didn't mesh. The team didn't mesh as well. I mean, quite frankly, I was telling the screener, sometimes you have to break it if it works. Like I always felt like we would never have cell phones if we didn't subscribe. If it ain't broken, don't fix it. I mean, sometimes you could tweak it and make it even better.
Well, technology evolving. Ed, let's backtrack a little bit. Volpe had the highest batting average in Major League Baseball. Volpe was tearing the cover off the ball. He was hitting home runs. He was hitting the ball the other way. He looked like a different hitter than we saw last year. It was day and night. We were talking about how he matured in the offseason. He was in the sixth spot. He was in the second half of the lineup. And I feel like that was because pitchers had to face Gleyber Torres, Juan Soto, Aaron Judge, Anthony Rizzo, Giancarlo Stanton. Then by the time they got to him, right, his eye has improved. He changed his stance, his bat path, and now I felt like they just jumped the gun. I felt like we could have gave it more time. Now, yeah, it was out of necessity somewhat, but their reasoning is what I didn't like. They said that the reason was to get Gleyber Torres going. They felt like Gleyber Torres was pressing. Gleyber Torres is 27 years old. Gleyber Torres is a pro ball player. Like, I understand that Volpe is too, but Volpe is 22 years old in his second year. He did not have the development years in the minor leagues. He was affected by COVID coming up. Volpe is going to be a star player. But I felt like they jerked him around last year as a rookie, moving him around in the lineup.
You know what?
And here we go again.
I understand. I understand what you're saying, and it makes sense. But you know as well as I do, if he continued to, he's not going to continue to hit 400. He's going to level off anyway. But if he continued to do that and they didn't move him up in the order, people would be screaming. Maybe he'd have 10, 12 stolen bases
but
by then.
But we want everything so fast. We're going now into the fourth week of the season.
No, I'm agreeing with you. I'm saying if it was me, I would have left him at the bottom.
Yeah, I would have left him too.
But now
it's
he's
fine.
Up. Yeah, if he's up, then he's gonna have to perform. I'm sure. Do you think they went to him? I mean, when they did it with Jeter. Jeter was the 9 hitter when he first came up. How long was Jeter at 9 before they moved him up to 1?
I don't know. I was in the first grade, but like what I'm talking about.
No, you.
I'm talking about Volpe right now. I thought that they had a good thing going with him in the second half of the lineup, and their reasoning for putting him in the leadoff. Obviously, it had a lot to do with his success, but their reasoning was to get Gleyber Torres going. Did Gleyber Torres get going?
No, well, that's a cop out. I don't like that. No, I mean, I don't. Think
I wish they wouldn't even have said that. Then I wish they would have said Volpe earned it.
That's
and the future is now. We're not waiting 10 years. The future is now.
I don't. And now, who is that? Boone said that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like that. I like Boone. You know what? You know what? Exactly. You bring him up because he earned it, and that's it. And leave it alone.
Yeah. Don't say it's to get Gleyber Torres going.
You're gonna mess with a kid to help. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
And then it's like, okay, then other guys aren't hitting. Judge is struggling. You know, I don't know. They have 13 wins. They're in first place. All is well. Thanks for the call, Ed. But I'm just saying, right, that was discourse on this station. Evan Roberts was saying, no, you do make this move now, right? You do it now while everything's going good. You don't wait until things are going bad. And I said, no. It's early in the season. There's no reason to change this. Things are going good. Keep going. If Gleyber Torres doesn't get it together, then DJ LeMahieu will be back. DJ LeMahieu is about to start doing spring training games, right? He could be back as soon as next week, right? So then you put him there. Somebody who has done it in their career a lot. I just feel like, again, and this is how I feel. I don't care how y'all feel. Like, you can agree or disagree with me. I feel like from watching Volpe last year, he was a nine hitter. He was low in the lineup. And they had a bunch of bums in the lineup around him. They did him a disservice as a rookie. Yeah, Volpening day. We're not going to send you down, kid. But then we're going to ask you to be a bunch of different things. Be the seven hitter, the six hitter, be the leadoff hitter. Oh, no, you're struggling. We got to drop you back down. The kid was never a 190, 200 hitter. And then he showed you that he put in the work this offseason. And right away, we saw the results. Tip my cap to James Rawson. Tip my cap to the Yankees, all the coaches, and working with him. And Volpe, this kid loves baseball. He puts in the work. You can see it. But I felt like they got cute, and I just didn't like the way it played out. It played out in three ways. One, they asked Aaron Boone about it because everybody in Yankee land wants everything instant, microwave, New York minute. Put him as the leadoff spot now. Volpe's the leadoff hitter. He's supposed to be the leadoff hitter. Gleyber sucks. So they asked him, you know, is there a chance that he's going to be the leadoff hitter sooner rather than later? And Boone kind of deflected and deked us a little bit and said, yeah, you know, when we look up in 10 years, he'll be at the top of the lineup. And then the next day, Volpe's leading off. And I saw Yankee land was split on it. The greatest rivalry in baseball is Yankee fans versus other Yankee fans. So I know as I say this, Yankee fans are split on it. Some of them are like, hey, he's fine. Sooner rather than later, whatever. But like what I'm saying is it was premature. He had a 4-strikeout game the other night. He looks like he's pressing. He's on the top of the ball. He's grounding out. He's trying to beat out grounders. That wasn't how he looked in the beginning in the second half of the lineup. It played on three ways. Boone with the media saying, oh, 10 years, and then, oh, April Fools. Now he's in the leadoff spot the next game in the fourth series of the year. And then they also said it was to get Gleyber Torres going. I don't give a damn about getting Gleyber Torres going. He should get himself going. This is a contract year for him. He should wake up in the morning ready to go. He should wake up in the morning knowing where to throw the ball, knowing how many outs there are. And then third is you said that you did it for Gleyber to get going. Gleyber hasn't gotten going. Gleyber is a 200 hitter right now. 877-337. Actually, don't call. We're about to bring in a guest. If you're on hold, stay on hold. We'll get to you. We're going to talk Knicks basketball with Ian Begley from SNY, who can talk about the Knicks and this matchup in depth with me for the next 15 minutes after we come back from this break. Keep McPherson on the fan. Give me a couple minutes. We'll bring Ian in at 11:15. We'll do the thing and we'll close the show. BRB. And we're back. Keith McPherson on the fan. Joining us right now, Ian Begley, my guy who covers the Knicks and the Nets and the NBA for SNY TV. He's just a hoops talk guy. He knows what he's talking about. We're about to talk Knicks. We're about to talk Sixers in that first round matchup. Ian, what's up, man? You're on the fan.
Keith, what's happening, man? How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for making the time tonight. I know you're busy, especially around this time of the season as it's play-in tournament time. I know there's no games on tonight, but we watched the play-in tournament last night. I watched it right here, and I'm looking at the Sixers. I thought they were cooked in the first half. They were down 13. I was laughing. I'm like, choke artist, Philadelphia. You can't spell Philly without two L's. I'm looking at Embiid. I'm like, is he hurt? Is he not conditioned? Is he tired? Is he hobbled? I'm like, this is the team that's going to beat the Knicks? This is the team that the Knicks are supposed to fear?
You know what? Joel did not look good. He didn't look like himself. I think early on he looked a little bit more sharp. But, Keith, I'll say this. In those big moments late in the game when Philly needed something, he delivered. He had 10 of their – he was responsible, I should say, from 10 of their 11 points in that swing late in the fourth quarter that really gave Philly the game. So, you know, yes, he didn't look good. He still made big shots, and maybe that he can carry that with him into this series, which starts Saturday, game one. So I say all that to say, don't sleep on the big guy. He's a former MVP, very good player. Let's see what he can bring over the course of the series.
How do you think the Knicks plan on defending Joel Embiid? How do you think they plan on stopping the reigning MVP?
Yeah, you know, it starts with Isaiah Hartenstein. If you remember, the Knicks blew Philly out a couple months ago. That was actually the first game where Miles McBride really started to shoot it well. And Hartenstein defended Embiid. He defended him really well. He blocked a couple shots. He deterred him around the rim. So I think it starts there. And I think what you have to worry about with Embiid is the pick and roll with Tyrese Maxey. And in that instance, the Knicks big man is going to get pulled away from the paint, pulled away from the rim. They don't love that. They like their big near the rim by and large. So that's something to keep an eye on. But you have Hartenstein. You have Mitchell Robinson, who is nowhere near 100% in terms of conditioning, but he's going to give you everything he has. You could throw Precious Achiuwa at him. You could even throw Jericho Sims at him if you just want somebody to go in there and be physical with him for a few minutes. So they have options. I would say out of all the teams in the league, they have the most depth to throw at Embiid, and maybe that makes them the best positioned team to face Embiid over the course of a playoff series.
Yeah, now I have the converse question for the People's Champ, the People's MVP. How do you think the Sixers plan on stopping Jalen Brunson? I don't think they have anybody that could check him.
You know, it's interesting because they have length. And in that same game that I was talking about when the Knicks blew the Sixers out, you saw Nick Batum pick him up like full court. And obviously Batum is nowhere near as fast as Brunson, but he's got a big wingspan. Kelly Oubre Jr., another guy with a big wingspan. So they have guys who can at least get in his way, make him a little bit uncomfortable. But if you've watched Brunson over the last 2+ months of this season, I mean, nobody's been able to stop him. So I would assume for Philly, it's less about trying to shut Brunson down and more so about trying to mitigate the damage that other Knicks could do, maybe like a Dante DiVincenzo, because Brunson's just been on another level of late.
Now, I had a take about Julius Randle. I had two takes. One I retracted, right? When the news came out about Julius Randle, I was like, oh, that's it. They're not going to get the team back. They're not going to get the band back together. They're not going to be able to do it. And then I thought about it, and I looked at the box scores, and I watched how they played after that news, and I'm like, wait, this is a different team without Julius Randle. They've evolved. They've changed. And the take that I had that I'm not retracting is maybe there's a silver lining here, right? Julius Randle, a lot of people give him flack for quote-unquote failing in the playoffs. A lot of people were hard on him last year, 2 years ago. I think that without Julius Randle, it's Brunson's show, and then it's the supporting cast around him. I think they're going to move the ball. I think other guys are going to have a chance to shoot, a chance to rise. And maybe the silver lining here is that they play better. Maybe they get further. Maybe they just, it was written in the stars for them to go deeper in the playoffs without Julius Randle. They got OG back. They got Mitch back. You know, what do you think about Julius Randle? You think they'd be better off with him, or you think they're better off without him?
Look, man, Randle is a lightning rod for good and bad when things are going bad. He usually is the one who catches the flack. So the theory is going to be put to the test. That's certainly going to be the case over the next few weeks here. I think one thing that you've seen, obviously the ball in Brunson's hands much more, and he has the freedom to create for both himself and his teammates. Not saying he didn't have that freedom prior to this, but Randle, to be effective, needed the ball in his hands. That's just what it was. Not a good thing, not a bad thing, just how it was. And the Knicks, let's not forget, they were playing really well with a healthy Randle and with OG Anunoby after Anunoby was dealt to New York. They had that crazy January. Randle was a pivotal piece there. So I think people kind of forget about that. But yeah, the theory is certainly something that Knicks fans are thinking about or wondering about. And yeah, we'll see how it plays out over the next few weeks. The one thing about the postseason, obviously everything slows down over the course of a series. Teams get so used to each other, and you need guys who can create their own shot. They have that in Brunson. They had it in Randle. Randle not being there, I just wonder if the game slows down, you have to rely too much on Brunson, where else do you go?
Yeah, you go to Dante DiVincenzo. You go to Josh Hart. You go to OG Anunoby, Miles McBride. I've made a lot about the fact that these Villanova kids played a lot of games in the Wells Fargo Center, that they're comfortable down there, that the arena's only 90-minute drive away, and that Knicks fans have already taken over Wells Fargo Center. Do you think that gives them any type of advantage on the road? I don't think it works the other way around. I don't think the Sixers are coming up here to the Garden and having any advantage in New York. But I think the Knicks fans and the Knicks players are going to feel right at home down there in Philly.
You know, if you're comfortable in an arena, I think that matters. If you have had success in the past in a certain arena, I think that can only help. It can't hurt you. At worst, it's a neutral factor. As far as the fans go, I don't know, man. Every time I'm at a Sixers playoff game, that place is loud, full of Sixers fans. So I would be surprised. I mean, we're not talking about a regular season game here. I would be surprised if we heard, you know, "Let's go Knicks" in the Wells Fargo, and it wasn't fully drowned out by Sixers chants. I do think the Sixer fan is going to be out and going to be loud for the games in Philadelphia. But what you say, I believe, is true in terms of their past success, the Nova Knicks' past success in Philly at the Wells Fargo Center, and that, again, potentially being a plus for them.
Another question for you. We're on the phone with Ian Begley. He covers the Knicks for SNY. You've probably seen him on SNY TV. You've probably seen him on Twitter as well, at Ian Begley. Why do you think the Sixers are favored? Why do you think the Sixers are the betting favorites in Vegas? And then also, how many games do you think this series is going?
I assume Vegas just sees Embiid, and that's where it starts, right? That's the only thing I could assume, because if you look at the totality of the regular season, you know, the Knicks seem to be playing really well going into the postseason. Sixers undefeated since Embiid has come back. But I don't know. I look at the Knicks as a stronger team top to bottom. But I assume it's about Embiid and about the people setting the odds, expecting Embiid to make a huge impact on this series, both ends of the floor. I don't know if they're seeing, though, the conditioning for Embiid. And I think if you're the Knicks, you try to take advantage of that, right? You make it a full-court game. You push the ball in transition. You play 94 feet. You force Embiid to defend pick and rolls again and again and again, and you try to kind of wear him down. So I think there are ways the Knicks can not neutralize Embiid but make him less effective. If they're able to do that, they should have success in this series. As far as number of games, Keith, I would go six. I'd probably go six. I do think because of home court, the Knicks should get through. It's not going to be easy. I think it's going to be a very good series, but I think it'll go at least six.
Yeah, so it's two in New York Saturday at 6 p.m., game one. Monday in New York at 7:30, game two. Then Thursday, they'll go down to Philadelphia for game three at 7:30, and then a 1 o'clock Sunday game in Philadelphia. Now, it's TBD the rest of the way, but it goes New York, Philly, New York. I've been saying Knicks in five. I just honestly think that I think the Knicks have a better chance of winning in Philadelphia than the Sixers do. I think by the time we get to game four, these guys are going to be tired. I think the Knicks have been running and playing a lot of minutes. I think Embiid is soft. I think they've choked so much. I think the Sixers may get that first game in Philly or that second game in Philly, but I just feel like a gentleman sweep is coming.
What about Maxey, though? I mean, let's not forget about Tyrese Maxey. He can turn the corner on a pick and roll. He's a blur with the ball.
They're going to need him to be. He wasn't himself in the play-in game, and I know that's one game.
Yeah.
I've spoken a lot about Embiid supporting cast. They've had Jimmy Butler. They've had Ben Simmons. They've had James Harden. Now it's time to see what Maxey can be as the Robin to his Batman. I don't know if Maxey is ready for the bright lights just yet.
It's going to be interesting, and you know it's going to be a hostile environment in the Garden for him, but he is such a talented player. And Buddy Hield kind of has gone under the radar, but he is the one player that, you know, he could come in a couple minutes, stretch, get hot from beyond the arc, and make a big impact on a game. So, yeah, I think Philadelphia, you know, the depth, I would give the Knicks the edge in depth, but
that's the next thing I was going to ask you. Do you think the Knicks have the better bench than the 76ers?
I would say it might be a wash, but you know, the Knicks bench It's got to be better in this postseason than it was last postseason. The Heat bench destroyed the Knicks bench in that second round, but it's very different, right? It's very different. It's about Bojan Bogdanovic. It's about Miles McBride and if they're knocking shots down. And Miles McBride, when he's hitting shots, and he did really well for the Knicks in that stretch where they had no OG and an OB, and they didn't have Julius Randle, he was part of the reason the team was able to tread water and win games. If you get that Miles McBride off of your bench, if you're the Knicks, that's a huge plus, but that's an unknown. But Bogdanovic, shot it poorly to start. He started to make some more shots more recently at the end of this regular season. What does he bring to the playoffs? And so I think it starts with those two when you look at this bench. Philadelphia, I just think when you look at their depth, you see some guys where you can throw different looks at Jalen Brunson defensively. I don't know how effective it'll be. Again, it doesn't seem like anybody has been able to stop Brunson over the last 2 months. I'm sure they'll be aggressive. And then for Brunson, it's how do you deal with getting that second defender and then getting the ball out and getting the Knicks the 4-on-3 on the other side, and how do the Knicks take advantage of that? Brunson's been very good at that lately. I'm sure he'll see a lot of attention against the Sixers. We'll see how he deals with it.
Yeah, what do you make of the comments from Reed and some of the other Sixers? I feel like the Sixers players, and they have some older players, some veterans, I feel like they're taking the Knicks kind of lightly. And I do believe in bulletin board material. I think it's going to be chippy. It's New York versus Philly. I think it's going to be a tough battle. But ultimately, I just think the Knicks are the better team. They're the better conditioned team. They have the better bench. They have a better score right now. I think Brunson's going to be able to get his buckets more so than Embiid. What do you think about the discourse, the back and forth, the chatter so far once we've learned that they're the matchup?
Oh, Keith, it's great for our business, right?
Yeah.
We love it. But I think I was in Philly actually last night and talking to some of the guys about the Knicks, and they were very respectful. They talked about, the Knicks earning their spot, very good team. They're going to have their hands full. So there wasn't a lot of that last night after they beat the Heat. Paul Reed, he's on a podcast or he's on a television show, internet show, whatever. Maybe he got a little excited. What I'd like to know is what was Nick Nurse's reaction to Paul Reed's statement. I would imagine he wasn't thrilled with it. But hey, the Knicks, I think they were motivated before Paul Reed said what he said. And maybe it's motivation for them, added motivation, but I don't think they needed any more motivation. I think the group, that's one thing about this group, like just their step-by-step approach to day in, day out, doing the little things, and they're so committed to winning and to having winning habits. I don't see this thing, the Reed thing, as having much of an impact at all in that locker room. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they put it right on the screen as they're running through their plays, but it just seems like they're locked into a specific way of thinking, and they're not going to let anything from the outside kind of disturb that.
Last thing I'm going to leave you with, Ian, I hate to say it, but the refs are going to play a factor in this series, bro. I guarantee it. With that foul merchant that Joel Embiid is, always seeking and looking for the foul. And trying. The refs, depending on how they are with the whistle on him, and if they're not calling fouls for Brunson, we're going to know it right away. They are going to play a huge factor in this series. Mark my words, everyone listening to me, these refs got to be on it.
You know what, Keith? That game last night, they really let those guys play. That turned into a really physical game. I don't know if that would continue with this series, but I think it would make for a good basketball entertaining series if they let them play a little bit, let them be a little physical. It's the playoffs. Brunson, we all know, the Knicks don't feel that he's officiated fairly. They feel like he takes a lot of contact and does not get the whistle that he deserves. Maybe by making that public in the ways, subtle ways that they have, maybe that influences the officiating in the postseason. But yeah, the officiating certainly is going to play a role here. How many times can Embiid get to the line? Can he get Hardenstein in foul trouble? Can he get Robinson in foul trouble? Can he get his team into the bonus? Those are all going to be factors, and we'll see how it plays out. I'm excited. I mean, I feel like this town is behind this team in a way that I haven't felt a Knicks fan base behind a Knicks team Maybe Everett. I've been covering them 10-plus seasons. It didn't feel this way in 2012, 2013, because that team kind of came out of nowhere. This group feels like there's more of a sustainability. It feels like there's just a confidence of the MSG crowd in person that this Knick team could get down 10, 12, 14 points in a first half. Maybe in years past, fans would start booing and boo them off the court at halftime. But the fans seem to be more confident, have a little bit more patience with this group. That seems like a good thing to me.
That's a great thing. I think they believe. I think they trust these guys. I think that Knicks fans are ready for this run, and I think it's going to be a long run. Ian, I appreciate you, man. My show is running out, but thanks for making the time for us. You're the best.
Pleasure's all mine, Keith. I appreciate you, man. Take care.
Ian Begley, SNY TV. Okay, let's break right here. Whatever you guys want to talk about in this last 20 minutes, we can do. I've got a couple calls. Let's see. Mitchell is out in Queens, and Eric is in Manorville. Anybody else that wants to come on down, 877-337-6666. The last little bit of my five-hour show. We'll be right back. Still here. C-Mac is out there. Rami Lavie is out there. They're coming up next. And I think I've got 14 minutes to take the rest of my calls. It might take 14 minutes to take these next four calls. Let's go to Bob in Queens on the fan. What's up, Bob?
Hey, Keith. How are you? You've done a real heavy lift tonight. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, not a heavy lift. Just trying to talk about everything, touch on everything. I feel like we have a lot of different listeners that want to hear about everything, and I try to do it all in 5 hours.
Well, you know, I wanted to speak about your points about Trevor Bauer and to try and validate them for your audience. I'm a criminal lawyer and have been for over 40 years. I was a prosecutor for more than 30 years. And, you know, I think people need to really look at the dimension of what it is that Trevor Bauer was engaged in. You know, the fact that a criminal investigation crumbled because of credibility issues involving the gold-digging young woman doesn't mean that these horrible deeds that were alleged didn't occur. They did. And the fact that he can't be prosecuted for these dreadful deeds that we know occurred, does that mean that an organization should embrace some individual who performed these despicable things and was able to evade criminal liability? And you have to look at it from your organization. If you're contracting this guy and you're bringing him into your community, what you're ultimately saying is somebody who was involved in an act of sexual sadism, it's okay if it gets me a couple of extra wins. I'm willing to embrace that and have that in my clubhouse. And I really don't know that any organization really wants to do that. And our two organizations in town, you know, Hal Steinbrenner has daughters, Brian Cashman has daughters, Aaron Boone does, Carlos Mendoza does, I believe Steve Cohn does. And is there any way that they could look at their own daughters and bring this kind of thing into their organization? And I think that the fact that they are saying to themselves that a couple of wins may be worth embracing somebody who defines pleasure in this really repulsive way, it is a non-starter. And I just know for myself, I played ball in high school. I'm the son of a mother. I am the brother of a sister. I'm widowed from a wife. I'm the father of a daughter. I wouldn't want this guy anywhere near my clubhouse. And I can't imagine that Aaron Judge does, that Garrett Cole does, that Pete Alonso would, that Carlos Lindor would, that none of these guys would want any part of this. And there's no way that any free agent would want to be part of associated with a clubhouse that wants this in their clubhouse. And that's why he's the pariah he is. And that's why, as you say, his career's over. His career, there's no apology tour good enough that he's going to go on. And he certainly hasn't been on one yet. As you said, he's played a victim card rather than trying to say that I've tried to find out what it is that made me do these horrible things and try and ensure that I'll never do them again. And I think you really hit the nail on the head when you just said baseball is better than he is. It's a privilege. He shouldn't be in it.
Hey, you said it all right there, Bob. Thanks for the call, man. I just don't even care to give Trevor Bauer any more airtime. I did a whole show on this before I went to spring training, where I just was like, all right, let's have it out. Let's have the conversation. And I'm glad that there are people that understand, that get it now. But I understand there's a lot of people that don't get it. I understand there's a lot of people that aren't seeing the whole, like, it's not hard to see, but whatever. Do you, if you guys want to be Trevor Bauer fans and campaign for the guy and look past it, like Bob just spoke it all to you. And obviously from his professional background, he did it better than I could. But I think I did a pretty decent job tonight and the night before I went to spring training. Like, it's just not going down. And I think it's super weird that grown men are like, put Trevor Bauer on the Yankees. Or that grown men are like, well, what about Aroldis Chapman? Maybe the Yankees learned from Aroldis Chapman, Domingo Germán, and said never again. And you want them to say, oh, well, we did it before with them, so let's make the exception again and bring this guy in. No. No. Nobody's doing it. It would have been done already. We're going into week 4 of the baseball season. Eric is in Manorville next up on the Fan. Go for it, Eric.
All right, Keith. Thanks for having me again, my man. Much appreciated. Big fan. I heard on my way to bowling, like, you're on from 6 to 12. I'm like, oh, cool. I get the call in after my bowling match and hopefully get on the air, which I'm lying. So that last lawyer talked about, he basically made the closing statement. He could have went into the commissioner's office and been like, going in, you know, I mean, that was pretty cool. But I was listening to every word he said.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, next topic, I'll talk a little bit about the Mets. And probably just a little touch on hockey because it's so exciting with everything, with the Madison Square Garden, with the Knicks and the Rangers going, you know, pretty much almost the next, hopefully, some months, but we'll see. But, I mean, my son went to the game yesterday. We sat right behind the dugout. It was cool. It was like, oh, day game. Get the tickets. Let's go. Sat in, like, section 114, like, two rows up. And watched everybody, like, you know. And I wanted to talk about Lindor because I hear Salicata talking in the morning about, like, batting lefty-righty and his numbers. And he's, you know, all the Lindor fans are like, ah, you got to look at it over the course of his career. He batted 271 one year as a lefty. You know, blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, I coached high school varsity baseball. I'm like, all right, yeah, the best kid on the team at the end of batting practice is going to grab a bat and try to go lefty. Yeah, look, I can hit it to the wall. You know, maybe, you know, I think somebody in the port and wherever he grew up, when I probably got looked at when he was like 15, 16, said the quickest way to the majors is to be a switch hitting shortstop because that's in demand. You're a great fielder. You can hit, obviously. But just watching his stance, lefty versus righty, watching his bat, his follow through, his bounce, his getting the barrel to the. I mean, the main thing in baseball is you got to barrel it. You got to hit the sweet spot. You don't barrel it, you can just hear it. Like we're at the game yesterday. I'm like, these guys are hitting fly balls out to the outfield, and people are like, oh wow. I'm like, dude, I can hit a crack of the bat. It's a fly ball. That's it. It's not going nowhere. So anyway, I mean, I talked to Mike on a Sunday morning. And I didn't really bring it up too much, and he just shut me down. He's like, Eric, he's been in the league. He's 30 years old. He's a switch hitter. And you think your 30-year-old is going to switch now to righty? And I'm like, if I'm doing everything lefty over and over and over and over, and it's a numbers game. Obviously, a game of failure, a numbers game. If I'm doing everything lefty, and I could, you know, I'm just thinking of how much better they could be. How many more, you know, probably.
Yeah.
I don't know about walks.
I think about Oswaldo Cabrera and how they're trying to make him not a switch hitter and just have him right. Hit lefty. And he's very early in his career. There's pride involved. There's coaching involved. Like, who's going to tell him? And is he going to have, you know, too much pride to say, okay, I'm going to drop that now. And what if it doesn't work? What if he does that and it doesn't yield the results?
Right. Yeah.
I'll say this about Lindor. Thanks for the call, Eric. We're running out of time. He is a traditionally slow starter, but when he's on and he's hot, he's one of the best shortstops in the game. Defensively, his glove is there. When it gets warmer outside, his bat hopefully is there. I don't know. I just think Lindor never should have been a big money contract guy like that. It is what it is. You kind of get paid for what you did, not what you're going to do. He's got to do more. Let's go to Mitchell in Queens on the Fan. You got it, Mitch.
Hey, Keith. Pleasure speaking with you again. I think that we need to let the professionals evaluate Francisco Lindor, not high school baseball coaches.
well, I mean, fans whether they're high school baseball coaches or fans, we're all evaluating. We all think we're managers and coaches and, you know.
Agreed. But even if it looks bad, everyone goes through slumps. I want to just touch on 2 points. One on the Volpe point, and I was looking this up during the break when you had Ian Begley on. When Michael Harris came up in 2022, I'm a big Mets fan, so I was following the Mets and Braves neck and neck, and he was unbelievable that year, and he's a great player. They didn't move him till into the top four of the order till mid to late September, and he got a $100 million contract. I think every Yankee fan would sign on the dotted line right now for Anthony Volpe to give the production that Michael Harris gives for the Braves. And I don't think there is a player in the league who's come in and been like, yeah, put you in the one spot and you're gonna thrive. Bryce Harper hit at the bottom of the order for a while till he got there. And I'm just thinking about like my team, like Nimmo took a while till he was the leadoff hitter, and he wasn't heralded as high as Volpe, but like, give the kid a break. He's gravy in a way that he's hitting now. He's like, your offense comes from Soto and Judge, and to start tinkering with that, I just feel like is way too premature.
It's early in the season. I just was slightly disappointed because, like I said, I felt like they moved Volpe around last year. I saw success in the second half of the lineup this year. Man, if they would have made this move in May or June, I wouldn't have felt this way. But, you know, they made it premature, in my opinion, and I've seen him struggle. And they said that they did it to get Gleyber Torres going, and Gleyber Torres hasn't gotten going. So whatever, they're winning games. Well, actually, they lost 3 games in a row. Let's see what Volpe does leading off at home, coming back home. And I think he's up for the task. I think he'll be fine there. But I felt like it was a premature move, and I felt like it was the Yankees getting cute and getting ahead of themselves after saying, oh, yeah, you know, in 10 years he'll be there. That kind of made us think, like, not yet. And then the next day he's leading off.
Absolutely. Just one thing about the Islanders. Someone was calling before about really gung-ho about them against the Hurricanes. So as an Islanders fan, I think that they match up incredibly well with the Rangers. I don't want them to see the Rangers because of just like, oh, it's just going to be like my heart getting pulled out the whole series. But we do not match up well with the Hurricanes. They play a better version of our game. They're the only team in the Eastern Conference outside the Lightning that have given us problems consistently on a year-to-year basis. So you could say we got to slay the Dragon and beat the Hurricanes, but I'm like, they're not the team I want to see. They focus on defensive hockey. They have better depth scoring and star power than we do. And yeah, we have better goaltending, but I'm like, the Islanders have outplayed the Rangers in some of the games they've been in this year, and you got to just hope that Patrick Waugh, as a better coach, that they're going to blow less leads. But I don't want to see the Hurricanes. We've played them in 8 postseason and 10 postseason games. We won 2 of them in the like the last since Lamorello's been there. So
yeah, I don't know. I kind of, that was Dave and Comack. He's an Islanders fan. I kind of laughed it off. I don't think it's going to be the same series as last year, but I don't think the Islanders are just going to, you know, smack the Hurricanes. The Hurricanes are good. Thanks for the call, Mitchell. We're running out of time. My guy Karan in Montclair, I'm wearing them J's, boy. I got to take a picture. Them Bred 4s are clean, my friend. I appreciate you. It was great to meet you in Patterson at the launch of the Charlie J. Muth Museum.
Hey, Keith. What's up?
You know, bringing it home. Another 5-hour show.
I hear you, home. I'm so excited about this weekend series. I'm going Saturday. I bought the tickets last month, whatever.
Nice.
My wife, I was supposed to take my wife. She let me know tonight that, oh, she don't really want to go.
What?
So lucky I had a backup plan. My best friend is like, I'm going to go with you.
Yeah,
even though
it's
I was promising him. Yeah, I know. It's, you know, it's what it is. Lucky I had a backup plan. Even though I promised him the bobblehead anyway, so he want to go anyway. I can't wait.
Yeah, hopefully the weather is cool. The bobblehead is going to have a lot of people out there. The John Sterling ceremony. Just hit me, man. I'll come find you. I'll be bopping around. It's going to be a good day for Yankee fans in the Bronx.
I hear you. I can't wait, bro. And it was like meeting you, too. It was great.
Yeah.
I think you got sick that day because it was cold out there, you know?
Yeah. So what day was that now?
That was Friday.
That probably makes sense because I didn't sleep that night. I was on till 2 a.m. and I got up and drove out there and I was on low sleep standing in the cold. You might be right, man. Thanks for the call. Mario in Long Beach, you got to call C-Mac Show. I know you're probably planning on doing that anyway. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Thanks for watching on TikTok. Thanks for just everybody, man. I get a lot of love during these five-hour shows online and through the calls. And I'm coughing in between turning the mic off. And in between breaks, I'm hitting the cough drops and whatnot. But made it through a whole week coughing through shows. I'm off tomorrow. But I got a special show coming up Sunday. I'll see you at the stadium tomorrow and Saturday. C-Max next. I'm out. Sports Radio 101.9 FM. WFNU.